program they're in the arts. And here's a guy who touches, who's the last living, you know, member of this scene almost.
Yeah, and I've been, you know, reviewing the beat history through, yeah, I've been doing, you know, watching documentaries on the subject and seeing.
I was thinking about that you must be, you were prepared for this biography by checking out the documentaries.
Yeah. And it's, you know, but it's interesting to hear from the point of view of a guy who just, you know, just saw these as being, you know, freak, you know, not freaks, but, you know, just other guys who were,
they didn't want to be middle class. They didn't want to work.
Yeah.
Fun.
But like, you know, you got towards the end of the, asked him, he says, yeah, I'll bet you never knew these guys were going to become a media phenomena.
Yeah,
you know, because they were just you know, part of the crowd of the town where this guy grew up, and then they end up becoming celebrities and memorialized, and we get to find out the real, you know, shit about, you know, Ginsberg being a narcissistic jerk, and
that's what's good about this. I always get to the bottom of everything. I found the guy who has everything on everybody.
Yeah.
And he makes McLuhan famous. He introduced McLuhan to Howard Gossage, for fuck's sake.
Oh, can't wait to get to that.
Yeah, and he introduces Lenny Bruce to Hugh Hefner. There's so many, much more coming down the pike.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, if you get a chance, scan through his oral history. I sent you the oral.
Yeah, I have it here.
He's the first engineer of Alan Watts.
No shit.
Yeah, he started KPFA.
Wow. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at this stage of his life, I mean, he's got no ego going on. He's just, you know, an old guy, recounting, you know, memories and being, you know, very matter-of-fact about it.
Right. It's fantastic. And I'm glad I met him.
I wonder if one thing I'd like to find out along the way, if it comes up in your dialogue with him, is did any one of these people in particularly have a significant impact on him as a human being, or, you know, change his life in any way?
Well, there are several, and the first is Jamie Dungalo, this guy at Big Sur. I mean, he's going to Big Sur, you know, 20 years before Big Sur becomes famous with the Esalen Institute, you know?
Wow.
Oh, here's another thing. He saved Tim Leary's Millbrook operation, Peggy Hitchcock's Millbrook, by agreeing to do the light shows and mixed media for Leary's lectures in New York in the mid-60s.
And that raised the money to keep the mansion around?
Yeah, and the Leary thing going.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot on that. He also was the background for Baba Ram Dass's tours when he was Richard Alpert and watched Alpert go around and sell LSD. I mean, we're going to get the real hidden history of everybody.
Right. Wow. Yeah. It's, I'll work on getting this up, and I hope, you know, there are parts where it's a little bit like listening to Bogart talk to,
Worcester,
there are parts where he starts rummaging through memories and the voice starts dropping off, and you wonder if the machine's even really picking it up very well at that point.
But to me, Gerd is quite loud. I mean, I don't see him faint like Paris LeMond.
Yeah, well, we'll see once I get it posted. I was wondering, it's too bad, I wonder if it's possible to find out what recording equipment Bogart used, because when he spoke with you and he spoke with Worcester, his machine was doing the fidelity was much better than what I'm getting. I don't know if it's possible to find out what he used.
I think he used a phone jack, like just attached a phone mic to the phone.
Right.
And I used to do that in CKLN, and I got really good quality. I think it's harder with the digital three-way we're hooking up.
Yeah, that's true. It's a little bit more
You know, the thing is, okay, let's say it's a bit faint. Well, look, people, you turn up the volume, you know. If you're
yeah, no, it's not broadcast quality. It's never going to go out over the radio. But, you know, the best way to listen to it is on your frickin' iPod. If you can put the earbuds in, you can listen just fine.
Yeah.
If you try.
And people will. People will eventually.
Yeah.
That's all they'll have. So we're getting a good historical thing here. And did you listen to the Boert Dobbs thing? And I was looking for the Peggy Hitchcock. Have you done that yet?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so we can maybe talk about that tomorrow night or something.
We can
talk tomorrow night.
Yeah, I noted the minutes.
So we'll go into that tomorrow night. And did you hear the Boert Worcester?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all pretty interesting. I mean, we're getting pretty interesting oral histories up on Five Body now with Paris Lamond and Garrett,
right?
And which is a whole world that did not like the Beatniks, you know. Gert is in between. I don't know if he knows. We'll find out if he knows Paris Lamond. But Gert is more on the anti-Paris Lamond thread, you know,
right.
In the other world.
Yeah, Flamand wouldn't have cared much for any of the poetry that Gert read tonight.
Right. But what's interesting is
what's interesting to me, knowing you, is knowing why that poetry became representative of the period. And that's because of the electronic environment at that time with mixing it all up and creating, you know, these shards of images that had that were nonlinear.
That's right. And we'll get into that. We'll get into the intellectual pattern recognition. I was trying to get it a bit with the bomb and radio, but nothing much there. But we'll develop that. This is not just going to be his story. It's going to be him looking, and he's a student of McLuhan. We'll look at whatever we want to use to see what we see, what we're going to discover. We're going to discover something here.
It's interesting to hear a little about was it an immigrant background? Yeah, because I was just watching a documentary on Warhol, and he had an immigrant background. He grew up in Pittsburgh, but his parents were immigrants. And
Czechoslovakian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Gert had a whole involvement with Warhol. It's not anybody, whoever you ever heard of, he hasn't been involved with. I mean, who was it? I was just thinking, I forget. Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What do you hear about that story? And then there's the someone you... Gerd, they form later when the middle of the psychedelic period, when he's working with Leary and that, they become the main hippie poster makers and tie-dye shirt designers and this stuff, at least part of the paraphernalia that gets into the head shops. And they're on the cover of Life magazine in 66 and an Inside article, two articles, one on the cover and one inside. They're the main hippie representatives of multi-technological happenings.
Wow.
Happenings. I mean, they make art history. That's what he means by USCO. That's us and company, or us company. That's what we're heading towards. But that's he has a whole incredible life in high society in San Francisco. And remember, he mentioned Maya Angelou. She was the poet laureate for the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his girlfriend. Lived with her.
No shit. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I know who she is. Powerful black woman.
Yeah, remember he had the book, his own book of poetry, dedicated to her, to Maya, in July 55.
Wow. Right?
And he has to...
But he wasn't just a cheesy poet. He was actually pretty good, I guess, huh?
He was never big in poetry like Ginsberg, but he was always doing what he was doing. And he goes into later in the oral history about why he was always never part of any school. He had a different thing. But he's the guy who hooks up with McLuhan more than any of them.
Wow.
I've got Gerd and McLuhan's correspondence.
Oh, wow.
But what was I saying? So Maya, he has to, they're not allowed to be in white hotels. The blacks don't like him. He's in a limbo with Maya for a couple of years, going around. She's performing in the Purple Onion and the Hungry Eye and with other famous people, and Gerd is, they're going to nightclubs, and he's monitoring all this, and they meet all the jazz musicians that come to his barge.
Hmm.
This actually, he is the guy who knows everybody more than anybody else.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty pretty interesting. And but he himself is not any kind of a personality. He's just a guy who was, you know, everywhere he was supposed to be at the right time.
Yeah, he's a sincere person. He has problems with all these people because they are creeps, and he doesn't like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuart Brand, all these people, Brockman, all these famous people he doesn't like.
Wow.
They're all creeps.
Yeah.
He likes people like me and Carolyn, you know, honest
yeah.
people.
Yeah, I wonder if once you get a gig going, you know, the power starts to go to your head and it just
yeah.
tweaks you, you know, in different ways.
Did you ever see the movie Head?
No.
Well, you know, Gerd was part of that movie. That had Zappa in it, Jack Nicholson,
oh.
I think, produced it with the Monkees.
Oh. No, look it up.
1968. So Carolyn just watched Factory Girl last night, and I'll try to fit it in tonight.
Did she have any comments?
Yeah, she said it was pretty. She said that Edie really got fucked over.
Yeah, she did. I saw the documentary that I'm watching right now of Warhol has actual footage of her, and I have a film on order that I guess the Warhol with her starring in it. It's like a feature and. But I probably won't get that for a few weeks because I'm getting the Dylan stuff before that.
Yeah, that's Chow Manhattan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I've seen that. I saw that when it came out. What's the Dylan stuff you're getting?
The Scorsese documentary he did.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on TV, right. The, you know, he was a friend of Dylan's.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
The Warhol documentary I'm watching right now... shows Dylan in the factory sitting next to Warhol, and Dylan looks nonplussed, and when you watch Factory Girl, you'll see that Dylan was really nonplussed with Warhol, didn't like him at all.
Yeah, they didn't like the gay junkie scene.
Yeah.
Dylan didn't like the gay junkie, but did you hear I said Gerd was a friend of Dylan's?
Yeah, no, I heard that, yeah.
Swam in his pool up in Woodstock.
Oh my God.
And then he has a whole interesting story about him and Dylan, we'll get to that.
Yeah. How did you seduce him into being willing to spend all these hours on the phone recounting his experiences?
Well, you know, I knew of him on and off for heard of him because he's mentioned in Cliched Archetype. And then one time around 2000, I heard him interviewed on Bob Fass on WBAI. And so I called up and I said, "Hey, Bob, you're talking to someone I've wanted to meet for a long time." And I said... put him on. So Gerd and I started talking. I have a tape of that.
Oh.
And so I invited him into to Mark Stallman's loft at the Nonlinear Circle, and he was like our last Nonlinear Circle guest. And so we hit it off, and then he came and visited me in Carolyn. We remained friends through 2000, 2004. And then all these museums started to do a retrospective on the art that he made in the 60s, the famous art that was on Life magazine, the mixed media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he spent the last 3 years running around the world, Germany, England, New York, all over the place, lugging his old artifacts around and putting on, just part of nostalgia for the 60s level or the historical, like 67, the Summer of Love, 2007, they had his stuff in the Whitney Museum. So he's been busy... sort of becoming remembered, you know what I mean? Or his historical role in art was featured. You look at the new art forum as on the stands. Right now there's an interview with his colleague, important colleague, Michael Callahan or Kavanaugh, whatever it was, Callahan. Got to figure out a mnemonic to Callahan, so it's L, not B-L. Michael Callahan's interviewed in Art Forum. You read that. That's an interesting interview. Talk a lot about McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I saying that? So I didn't see much of him in the last 3 years. And then I told him, I got in touch with him, and I told him I was leaving. So he made a point of coming over to see Carol and I. He saw us on May 19th, the day before we flew to California.
Oh.
And he had not seen our new place. He'd been at the other place in 2001, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is, 2008. We're with him, and he's talking about being in New York and meeting this guy who I knew, an art critic guy I knew of. But no, all of a sudden we're talking, and he didn't know I knew Peggy Hitchcock, and that surprised him. But even before we get into that, we're talking about different people. And I said, you know, Gerd, I should, now that I had your technology available, I said, you know, Gerd, we should do an interview. We should, because he mentioned something about somebody. I said, oh, nobody knows that. We should do an interview, get some of this stuff on tape. And he said, well, you're psychic again. You got ESP, Bob. I was in Germany and met this guy, and I recognized the name. And he said he heard some of these stories. He says, man, we got to get this on tape. So he's going to interview Gerd in Frankfurt, Germany in fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, let me get the American version.
Yeah. Plus, it's really good preparation because you're getting him to dig around and dredge up stuff he probably hasn't thought about in a long time.
Yeah. And he always was a bit bugged by the oral history because the sequence is off, and the interviewer didn't know how to get it in right sequence.
Oh.
Well, we're now getting it in sequence. We're improving on the oral history, which, if he does write his memoirs, this is helping him get his life organized.
Yeah.
You know,
amazingly lucid for coming on to 80.
Yeah. No, Gerd is smart. I mean, he's spiritually pretty cool. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Anybody who can hang out with me and appreciate me and Carol, they're smart. You know what I mean?
That speaks well of me.
Yeah, most people get stupid. Right, like Carol was surprised. You said somewhere in L.A., you said, you know, my life is, maybe it's in front of Nancy Parker, I don't know, you said, well, my life, my main passion is listening to Bob.
Who said that?
You did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I felt slightly embarrassed after I said that because I'm like, you know, I'm with these sophisticated people who are probably thinking, this guy has absolutely no life.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but she says, what's your passion? I'm like, I don't know. I like to talk to Bob.
Yeah, but that's a good passion. I mean, they're not getting the benefits of these things.
Yeah.
They're not listening to Gerd.
Right.
This is all part of your education.
Yeah.
I'm a living university, what I bring around in my environment.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and then you got this Gerdy thing. We'll see what guests say about Gerdy when we get into that.
I know, I can't wait.
Yeah, maybe he even knows about E.J. Gold, though I would predict maybe not, but maybe he does. You
know? Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm sure E.J. knows about Gerd. Just as a side note, E.J. is about to become the world champion in this online game called, I forget what it's called, I used to play it, but there's this game that people play online. This particular one is a bit obsolete now because there's newer ones that people are getting into, but this one's really well established and you've got some major players out there. And for the last 5 years, EJ has been, it's called Diablo. EJ has been teaching people how to play the game and building up a team and of people who kind of back him up. He's sort of like the general on the battlefield, and then he's got all these team members who back him up, but he has to look out for them because if they get killed off, it wrecks the team. And so,
did you say he has to look after them, and they have to look after him?
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a team. It's a team effort, but he's leading the pack. And now somebody organized a world championship in cyberspace, which like he's been playing for like the last 4 or 5 days. I think the thing goes on for a week. It's like when he's sleeping, his team members take over, and then you know he gets like a couple hours of sleep. He gets up and gets back onto it. So it's like World War III or four or five or six, World War VI in cyberspace is going on right now. EJ's in fourth position right now in terms of winning the game right now.
His team is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an international thing, so.
Okay, that's good. Now, we'll follow up on that. Now, just, I posted a private message to Monsquaz the other day, and I asked him if he had a Mac or dealt with it, and he said yes. And I said, would you help me with it? And he said, sure, what do you want me to do? So I may have Monsquaz if I can figure out how to do this YouTube stuff.
Right.
Yeah, which is going to be great.
We figured out how to upload. The problem that you have to deal with right now is how to edit those down.
How to, how to do this, whatever it is, hanking back, hack back, whatever. I got that, but I don't know what to do with it. I need someone to show me from square one how you rip off, what's it called, ripping a DVD.
No, you don't have to rip it because it was recorded in a format that you can transfer directly to your hard drive.
Right. Well,
I don't know what format they used when they filmed it, but you don't have to rip it.
Let's not get into it. The thing is, I tried to do it with Greg, but he has a PC, so he can't see. I need someone with a Mac who
right.
knows what I'm looking at, and we go step by step. So anyway,
right.
the good news is Monsquaz, when we get the time, he should be able to help me.
Right.
And he's right there within my circle on Five Body. That's what's great.
Right. Just one thing, though, is that you're going to have to take into consideration, you might want to think about this when you get together with him, is that you're going to move those files from the CD to the hard drive on your computer. I don't know how they've been compressed, but they're in some kind of a format, like I think you said they might be in MPEG-4. MPEG-4 is a compressed format which is uneditable. So you're going to have to get some kind of software that you can open that up into your editing software. You're going to have to translate it into a format.
VOB.
VOB. Yeah.
Well, let's not worry about it. Okay. That's all meaningless to me. I have to go through it step by step with someone looking at the screen with me.
Right.
I
sounds good.
Problems are going to get. It's just good that someone nearby, so to speak, has a Mac. That's the big news.
Yeah. Where does he live?
Upstate New York. He's
okay.
About 21 years old.
Have you met him in face-to-face ever?
No. Yeah. I was going to meet him before I went. Came out here, but he couldn't make it. He had to finish his college exams or something. And work.
Cool.
But anyway, so we got that. So I went through the Jerry Fialka, me talking to Jerry privately, educating him on how to write his lecture for his art gig. That's pretty good tape.
Yeah.
I like that. The effects precede the causes is art, and science is studying the causes. So that was neat, and I haven't listened to the lecture yet, and that's it. We don't need a... I mean, you don't have to do anything unless you want to clip off the little bit at the end of the GERD thing where we're discussing what we're going to do next or something. I don't know if that, keep that on. Who cares, right? We're just talking and arranging things, right?
Yeah, that off already.
What?
I think I turned it off after we agreed that we were done.
No, but before that, I'm talking about the clipping, Rochester University. And that's okay to have that on. I don't think there's anything we need a clip from any of it.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you can, it'd be just great to announce it and say, hey, here's part one of the GERD student story. It's 3 hours there. That's enough for people. Keep them entertained for a few weeks if anybody's interested.
You know, what I noticed is interesting is that, you know, how the media does sculpt the message, because if he was on the radio doing this, he would be aware that he was speaking to a large audience, and it wouldn't be, but on the phone it's so...
It's a private medium.
It's like, oh man, this guy's my, you know, I'm talking to this guy, and this is like real life. We're just hanging out.
Yeah.
You listen to him on the radio, and it's like hearing somebody at a distance that you don't really know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it's if he wrote it, you know, he's structuring it for the written page.
Yeah.
So this is like the best way to actually get to know somebody is to talk to them on the phone.
Yeah, and get what they're thinking.
Yeah.
And what they think of people and the emotion and words and utterances that come through on the phone describing his impressions. It's not just strictly logical sentences. There's moods come through when we go into different topics.
Yeah. One of the things that is interesting to me, because we started back like 10 years before I was born with his history, well, it's interesting to me to be able to start...
We started 28 years before you.
Yeah.
Before 1928.
Right.
Almost 30 years.
Right. So we're going way back. And then but it's interesting to me to think about what was happening just prior to and around the time that I was born. Because...
Yeah.
All this, because, you know, this, the beat movement in the Village and Ginsberg, and all these guys were already doing their thing. I was born into a middle-class WASP environment where my parents had nothing to do with any of that culture.
Right.
And so I was completely oblivious to it, that it was going on. And yet it laid the foundation for the 60s in which I, you know, was, initiated into what was happening with culture. So it's cool for me.
It's a hidden ground.
Yeah.
McLuhan said that people are always obsessed with the world just before them, like their parents' world, and which they never lived in. So
yeah.
This is just before you're born. This is the—I don't know who's obsessed, but he implied there's a pattern that people are obsessed with what was just before them.
Well, kids today are particularly obsessed with the '60s more than any previous generation was
right.
obsessed with the past.
It's like I can explain all that, but I say that in one of my quotes in one of the tapes I think you made to Corbin. I listen to the Corbin thing. They're really good. Corbin's
yeah.
things are good. I, in passing, just say, well, they're obsessed with the last time there was human scale.
Right.
Okay, the other thing, it's like if, here's Gerd.
And then when I was listening to you talking to Boart last night or the other night, and you were talking about Rai returning to essence in 67, I could really get how that was
yeah.
the last gasp of the human anthropomorphic
form created by Rai.
And it was the most intense period in my lifetime. It was, you know, I mean, the bells were ringing, man. Everything was, you know, rock and roll was never more intense.
That's right. It was the last time for the human form, and the human form was created by Rai.
Yeah.
You know, it's the supernova. The star's dying, and it's the biggest, most brilliant, and it's death stages.
Yeah. Did somebody say the was it Ginsberg or Burroughs or somebody said the universe orgasmed during
That's
that period?
That's McLuhan.
McLuhan said that.
Yeah, reviewing Ginsberg. Reviewing Burroughs.
Burroughs, yeah.
But I wanted to say that we're talking to Gerd, who's looking at these guys, these creeps and weird guys and artists. It's like everybody we met around Jerry in 95, 96, 97, you know, Tom Brennan, Mark Free, all those people that you met, all of a sudden, 10 years later, they're fucking famous. You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
what we're looking at.
I know.
They're that fucked up or that obscure.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Free, the dope dealer. Remember the guy who went surfing with us? He had a lot of blotches on his skin. He did a punk movie in the 70s.
You know? Oh, yeah, I know. I know what you're talking
about. Rick. Rick Shore, I think his name is.
Rick Shore, yeah.
Rick. Yeah, Rick. And just the whole guys around Jerry.
Right.
You know? So maybe in the long run, they will be all famous because they worked with the famous Dobbs.
Yeah.
Make all you guys famous.
Or maybe there's not going to be any such thing as famous people
right.
in the future.
Yeah, to the degree that people watch the tape, the stuff on Five Bodied or hear our stuff, we're famous.
Yeah, well, you know, you're probably, this is what you're doing right now with Gerd, is probably, you know, like the whole astral plane, there's probably audience, thousands, you know.
Yeah.
There's probably a stadium, they're all gathering around to listen to this.
Yeah, because so many people he touched on are dead and know they were part of it.
Yeah.
It's like Garrett's the last oral history of it all.
Gerd Dean.
I mean...
Gerd, yeah.
Interesting, Gerd Garrett. Gerd.
Did Garrett know Gerd? Did Gerd know Garrett?
No.
How did he miss Garrett?
Because he was in the psychedelic zone, and Garrett wasn't part of that.
Oh.
Like Paris Lamont. There's like the Paris Salon guys. They didn't like what was happening to 60s New York.
Oh.
But the word Gerd is like Gerd. Gerd. Very good.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so, nowadays everything is famous because everything can be recorded and somewhere it's preserved. But I'm picking the interesting people that in the long run, like Walter said through James Curtis, that people will be studying me in 100 years. You know?
Yeah.
All this stuff will be part of it. There was another thought. It's something else I wanted to tell you. Oh, yeah. This guy who lives in one of the Hawaii islands, not Maui, Did you see my post? He's, what did I call it, worth tracking? He keeps making these neat 4 or 5 minute YouTubes with me and McLuhan.
Yeah, I just opened up my email and saw that there's a couple in there that you sent today.
Yeah, the top one, it's called, I sent three. It's called McLuhan and Dobbs et al.
Right.
All directions at once. And then Mike,
he opens it up with a scene from Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. And then there's then Michael Edmonds posts another one that I didn't know of, it where the guy, it's called Dobbs and McLuhan Digitization, and begins with my recent Harold Channer excerpts.
Is this someone that you've met or someone who's just doing this without ever having met you?
Never met him, but a year or so ago when I started seeing, he does really good editings on McLuhan stuff, McLuhan Audio. I think you've heard some of them.
Oh.
I contacted him by email, and it turned out he was living in Hawaii, so I told him I'll see him in
a year.
Is
this McLuhan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He lives in Hawaii?
Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's...
What's going to happen when you guys meet? That's going to be an orgasm.
Yeah, and he's going to... do I have his email here? Let's see. He's Bud. He calls himself Bud in the email. He just... he wrote to me... Like I said, I wrote to him, are you back in Hawaii yet? Because I knew he said he'd be coming in July, because he was over in Thailand or someplace. He goes, aloha, Bob. I'm not yet back in the islands. Hope to be back around the end of July, beginning of August. One thing is for sure to me, you and I will meet at some point in Hawaii. He says, I plan to visit Kalalau Valley on Kaui. I'm a member of the Kalalau Outlaw family. He actually sent me a few months ago pictures of them.
Mm.
You might consider a visit to the unusual place.
Mm-hmm.
See you soon. Ahoa i hui hui, some Hawaiian word. Then he writes another one. I go, okay, I will contact you then. I'm on Maui. Are you making YouTubes while traveling? He goes, in the last month, I've done about 40-plus vids on two channels. There's another one called Buzz Coasted and another one, McLuhan. And then here's the latest, McLuhan and Dobbs. But he didn't tell me about the one, McLuhan and Digitization. So anyways, he calls himself Bud Poston.
Oh.
I don't know if that's his real name, but I'll be seeing him in August.
Cool.
And then there's another guy that did pixels for Jerry's World and named Doug, and I'll see him in August too. He's away in Seattle too, till August.
I like the little vid that Robin's friend put up. The guy we met on the beach.
Eli.
Yeah.
That's good. And you know, he did DEFCON Bob, that other video, right?
Right.
Yeah. He did the whole documentary, 35 minutes. It's pretty good, and you just see 5 minutes of it on YouTube.
Right.
But there's another thought. Another guy, I sent the Robin Eli thing to Jack Cerfatti. Out of the blue, a guy in Hawaii emails me, and he's a friend of Jack, and he watched it, and he's going to beat me.
Oh, my.
So I'll meet a part of the Jack Cerfatti world.
Wow, so the nexus of connectedness is occurring in the South Pacific.
Yep. Okay, man, I'm going to leave it at that. I'll talk to you tomorrow night around, I think, unless something comes up around the usual time, 7 or so.
My time.
Yeah, that would be 10 my time, right?
Yeah.
Nine. Can you do it at 6? Or
no, you're 3 hours behind me.
Okay, so, yeah.
You called me at 5 your time, it would be 8 my time.
Yeah, I got to talk to Nelson Thal Jr. around 3 my time, so it'll be after that.
Yeah, I should be around.
And it always depends on what appointments or whatever Carol has to do on the phone.
Right.
So I'll talk to you some point tomorrow night.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks for editing or digitizing it today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, well, we'll continue. Hopefully you'll stay alive and everything will work out and we'll get more on tape.
Yeah, I hope I'm still alive, at least.
No, him.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, bye.